FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is March 15th, 2017. Yes, that means it's the Ides of March, and there's a lot to be wary of. That's for certain. It might not all happen today, but it's all connected. And here is Andrew Hoffman.
Hey there, Kerry. We were just talking today about how I did a podcast last week, which, the interviewer actually titled it something to do with the Rothschilds and the Ides of March, and it has 530,000 views.
That's what I'm titling this one. I got to give it a try and see what happens.
Yeah. So it really just showed me the vagaries of the internet and the fickleness of the global population and what they're looking at any given time. And obviously there's a lot of, Rothschilds aside, there's obviously a lot of attention to what's going on because, it's not like we didn't have enough catalysts right now to cause history's biggest equity and fixed income bubble to pop and history's biggest precious metal anti-bubble to pop and many other things to pop. In the world. But here we are on the Ides of March, and we have the Fed's potential fatal policy error. We have the debt ceiling coming back into play as of midnight tonight. And, as we speak, the Dutch people are likely going to be voting Geert Wilders to be the president or prime minister of the Netherlands.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on with the Netherlands and Turkey? They wanted to come campaign in the Netherlands for whatever they're doing in Turkey, the referendum, I guess. And they said, no, you can't do it. And they got into a whole diplomatic tiff there, barring the Turkish diplomat. And then
talk about the perfect storm for Geert Wilders. I mean, Geert Wilders' platform is anti-immigration and anti-Muslim. And for this to happen literally the day before the election couldn't have played better into his hands.
I mean, it's like... And it's all over the place. It's like what happened with Trump. I mean, everything else, there'd be terrorist attacks, and then people would realize, hey, the situation really is serious, and we need to really address it. And then they'd kind of go back to sleep, and something else would happen, right?
Yeah. My sense is, without knowing too much about the Dutch, that there is a lot of similarity between the Dutch and the German mindset. And of course, the German election is not going to be until September or October. So by that time, the world and Europe will have dramatically changed.
Oh, yes.
But if they had elections in Germany today, I have a feeling that what you see in the Netherlands would be what you'd see there.
Yeah, they just, it's a question of whether they have a viable candidate in Germany or whether one will surface, because the guy who's there wants to give illegal aliens or aliens there the right to vote. I mean, he doesn't exactly seem to be the answer to the question or the issues that are plaguing them.
Germany is kind of a mess, and I think their alternative for Deutschland Party is not nearly as popular as, say, the National Front in France or the Freedom Party in the Netherlands or the Five Star Movement in Italy. But obviously there's chaos over there. And, that people like to say any candidate, like they call Geert Wilders the Trump of Germany and Marine Le Pen the Trump of France. But I don't think that aside from being disruptors and they want change, I don't think that these are good characterizations, and certainly not the guy Martin Schulz. Germany. I wouldn't call him the Trump of Germany.
I'd call him the Bernie Sanders of Germany. Honestly, he's more like it.
It sounds like the German people, there's a large and growing faction of people who are unhappy, and you've seen them in the local elections. But at this point in time, I don't think it's as powerful of a movement as it is, because look, Germany is the best economy in Europe. I mean, they're the ones who have, self-admittedly destroyed the European
community. Done a masterful job.
Yeah. So I think it'll take what happens in the other elections, as well as the Brexit actually going through now, that's going to push the German movement to get a lot stronger. But, you know, this is today is just the appetizer because, look, I don't think Geert Wilders has enough votes to take the government. I think he's going to win the presidency, but not be able to take the government. So I don't know that the Nexit movement is going to move as fast as other places. But really, it doesn't matter because the big one is in France coming a month from now. And I mean, look, it's so funny how they're you know, the like the Fillon, the guy who was going to win. Now they've just charged him with embezzlement. So he's gone.
Let's make him a bad person.
Now they're trying to charge her with the same thing. To me, the charges against her are the equivalent of the Trump with the Billy whatever Bush tape.
Right.
Like, it's only going to make her more powerful, and it's going to backfire on them, because if she has 30% odds of winning, according to the rigged betting lines we always talk about, compared to the 15 and 20% that Trump and the Brexit had, I think it's a pretty much a guarantee she's going to shock the world. And when she does, if I said Trump was Brexit times 10, this is going to be Brexit times 100 when Marine Le Pen wins.
Oh, yeah. It's just a question then of when the euro ceases to exist, I think, or is greatly modified in its current. But if the French are out of the EU, I mean, they're out of the euro, that's the end here.
I mean, she initially said I would have a franc that's pegged to the euro. Now she says, no, I want a freely floating franc, and I don't care if it initially falls. In fact, she'll just be joining the currency wars because she's been obviously tipped by her people. Look, we want a weak currency, which, of course, is in the worst. You know, it's not good, but politicians think it's good. So it'll be a currency war. Look, I mean, all this stuff going on ends, and all everyone who thinks, oh, the Brexit wasn't a big deal, and Trump, if she wins, it truly is over. That's why I'm ignoring all this, the German stuff. Everything is over if she wins.
I would go so far as to say it's huge, right?
Yes, it's a lot more huge. I mean, really is. I said, you know, Brexit times 10 versus Brexit times 100, because, you know, Trump is a disruptor, but, a disruptor over a longer period of time. She's just like a lightning bolt striking right in the heart of Europe if she wins, and far more damage than the Brexit could even imagine doing.
Oh, this is just going to be the shot heard around the world. I mean,
yeah. And of course, don't forget, we're going to have Italian elections coming up shortly thereafter. And everyone keeps forgetting about it. It's amazing how it really is amazing, Kerry, how little mainstream press goes into some of the biggest events anywhere.
My goodness.
Like this Catalonian secession. I feel like I'm the only person following it.
I never heard it on the news except when I've talked to you. Yeah. BBC a little bit. Like, if you don't listen to BBC or watch it and you've got cable, you really, really should, because it gives you a whole different perspective on news and just everything there. I mean,
Catalonian secession, they had the vote in November 2015, and 90% of the people said they wanted it. And then last year, early in the year, they had a parliamentary vote, and the secessionists actually won. No one thought that they would win, but they did. And then later in the year, in the fall, I think they actually put forward their final plan of secession. And I think right now the plan is to vote on it in September. And I'm not sure all the mechanics of it, but if that's the case and they vote on it in September and they only need a 50% majority when they had a 90% vote in the initial referendum.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy said, if we get 50%, we're out.
Right.
And we're talking about 25% of Spain. And Spain is of the pigs. It probably has. Well, actually, Italy probably has a word. Well, Greece, forget Greece. That's not even a country anymore. It's like an anarchy. Yeah. But of the major nations, Italy and Spain are the two worst. And if Catalonia leaves, Spain is done as a country.
Right.
Financially, they're going to go bankrupt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They can't live without them. That's the most productive region of the country.
And it's where the wealthy people live, where all the taxes come from.
Right. And they've had it like wealthy people all over. Right. They've freaking had it. Enough is enough. Everybody is fed up. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, it's an interesting world out there. But we're just going to see more and more of this because there are no solutions, you know, which is what
that's right.
Get through.
And that's what I've been saying all along. I mean, for a time, there were people even in our world, who like, you know, it's kind of like human nature. You like, yeah, well, things are bad, but if we just do this, things will get better. And, yeah, you know, right. A lot of politicians talk like that, even like the Ron Pauls. But Ron Paul himself knows that it's not a matter of fixing things. It's a matter of the system has to die because it's done. I mean, it's when the debt has to be defaulted on. It's either going to be defaulted on involuntarily, like, say, Greece, because they can't control their currency, or via hyperinflation, which is how any central bank that can control the value of its debt has done so throughout the centuries. And that's what's going to happen everywhere around the world. It has to, because there's no choices, because we are in that terminal stage where the debt is rising parabolically. And there's really no way out except for currency wars, which buy the politicians a little more time, but further destroy the currency until inevitably you have, as I said last week, my podcast, my audio blog was called The Most Overdue Financial Crisis in History. And it has to hit at some point. I mean, we can't have record stock prices at a time where the world's falling apart forever. At some point, you're going to have this major crisis. And it's, I would think it's going to be this year. And when it does, you know, then the end game hits, when the central banks go berserk.
Yeah. Well, they've been barely contained thus far, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's really amazing that we're not talking about the ECB being berserk. They've already done more than $1 trillion of monetization. They got another at least $500 billion. They just came out last week and said we might extend it and increase it if we need to, and we'll have negative interest rates long after we even get rid of the QE. And yet we're not talking as if they're going berserk right now. I mean, how much more can they do? That's the beauty of it, right? What happens when you do have a crisis in Europe, when the stocks are crashing and you're already at negative 0.4% interest rate and you're already at hyperinflationary QE, what more can you do? Nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, 200 million euro, billion euros a month. They're already running out of bonds to buy. That's the big problem.
They have to buy
the stocks. Well, of course, that's what Japan does. That'll be the next thing. Buy up all the stocks. Are they going to buy up the real estate? I mean, what else is there to buy?
Helicopter money.
Oh, isn't that communism?
Helicopter money at that point. You just start giving the money out. That's what happened post-World War One, you know, Germany.
Don't they call that helicopter money?
Yeah, helicopter money.
Helicopter Ben Bernanke?
Yeah, that's helicopter money, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's it. So, I mean, what are you going to do here?
No, I mean, it's really remarkable. I remember we're talking about this Japanese stock market where the Bank of Japan now owns, I don't even know what the number is anymore. They own well above half of the ETFs. And I think they own, is it 10 or 15% of the entire stock market? And they're a top 10 holder of pretty much every Nikkei company. And so you go, I mean, you can run out of stocks to buy as well as bonds. So what do you do next? I mean, you literally, even if you feel like you have this limitless this limitless printing press, you literally will run out of things to buy. And in Europe, in the bond market, and in Japan, in the stock and bond markets, you're already reaching that point. And, you know, it's so, and just wait till the Fed has to join in, because as of right now, they're the only central bank in the world that's at least overtly not in the game. And, you know, then the saw we're sitting here thinking that they're going to raise interest rates. What are they, insane? The economy's collapsing. Did you see the retail sales numbers come out this morning?
They're
horrifying. Do you see the department store numbers that came out? I put in my article that's down like 20% year over year. They're going to raise interest rates at a time where we have a starkly high debt. And, oh, yeah, we have a debt ceiling and that's coming up tonight. Oh, and by the way, Trump is going to give his initial budget proposal tomorrow. So, okay, the debt ceiling is here and we're at the debt ceiling. And now the government has a process where they put out the budget after they already have hit the debt ceiling. I mean, how dysfunctional can this country be?
Yeah, well, the world's becoming ungovernable. I think that's what it comes down to. And I don't think we need to blame it on the Rothschilds. So I think we've done a pretty good job on our own here.
Has anyone even seen a Rothschild in public, in 25 years? Maybe one showed up at the Bilderberg meeting, but it's so funny that so many people attribute to this group of people who no one has even seen. I mean, are they behind closed doors like the Wizard of Oz, telling Ben Bernanke and Jenny Yellen what to do?
Pretty much. Well, I'll tell you what, in the WikiLeaks emails, or in some emails that got leaked, there was a bunch of emails from Hillary Clinton to one of the Rothschilds.
Oh, and, the wife, right? She's friends with a wife.
And the Mokta ritual that she was looking for, which I don't even know what the heck it is, some devil worshiping nonsense. And a whole bunch of garbage was in there. And, you know, it was a real eye-opener because, you know, they try to keep a low profile. Who the heck knows, you know, at this
point? I mean, look, there's a lot of people out there with money, like, you know, and George Soros is another one who gets a lot of attention, mainly because he's so visible in his contributing to causes that cause destabilization. But, you know, look, it says it's no different than the lobbying efforts of all kinds of rich people around the world that want favors. And the Rothschilds are one of many, many, many families that are very rich and have influence because they pay for it. But people, there are 7.5 billion people in the world, and the vast majority of them don't even speak English. And the vast majority of the leaders of these countries don't communicate with each other at all. So no, there's no small group that's running the world. There's a lot of competing groups that are vying for power and fortune, and a lot of them have similar goals. I mean, look, they not all, but most of them want the fiat currency system to continue because that is where they have gotten their wealth based on. But the world has way too many variables in it for any one group of people or one variable to influence everything. The fact is, it's the accumulation of decades and decades of mismanagement of financial and economic policy. And now we have overpopulation. You know, I've been talking about overpopulation for the longest time. And then I watched that movie Inferno, the Dan Brown movie, which is talking about that. There's just way too many variables out there. And we have never had a more unstable political, economic, and monetary environment in history, unequivocally. So whether it's, you know, whether small groups of people are exerting influence or not doesn't matter, because it's the big picture of demographics and debt and overcapacity that are what's taking the system down, irregardless of what individuals are trying to do to influence it.
And down it will go, that's for sure. No question about that, is there? So anyways, the Ides of March are finally upon us. The Netherlands election, Wilders definitely seems to be the guy here.
He's going to win, but he's not going to, according to what I read, he's not going to get a majority. So, you know, it's kind of like there are many, many parties and it takes a long time to form a coalition. Maybe he gets a third of the votes and he's thus the president. But not like he can form a government and immediately call for a nexit. But I have a feeling his party is going to do a lot better than people think. And it's going to strike the fear in the hearts of people who are looking ahead at next month's French election, which, I mean, as far as I can see on my horizon without black swans and the debt ceiling alone could cause the cataclysm that we were talking about. But as far as I see, the number one on my list right now of events that can catalyze is this French election next month. And it comes a month or two after that. That's the Greek. $7 billion to. I mean, at some point that thing has got to give, and it's just not going to be a bailout, and they're going to default, and that will start the whole ball rolling because they owe what, 500 billion euros, mostly to the Troika and to the banks like Deutsche Bank and the French banks. I mean, that's got to give at some point. I can't imagine that even that government taking another bailout.
Yeah, I mean, it has to stop at some point, right? I mean, you just keep shoveling good money after bad, or actually they're just rolling over the debt when you really get down to it, right?
Well, they're just printing money, giving it to Greece, and so that they can pay back their own banks with it. Mm-hmm. And then all that really does for Greece is it just runs up their debt. Nothing changes except that it becomes anarchy and a financial, collapse. Nothing changes. Correct. All it does is print money to pay back the banks.
Yeah.
And that's going to end. It's not. I can't imagine we'll get through the summer where they actually say, oh, yeah, we bailed them out again and we're doing more austerity. They haven't done the original austerity. Everyone knows it. They know it.
Yeah.
The world, the IMF came out and said, we know it. It can't happen. Yeah, so
of course,
a lot of black swans, a lot of gray swans, and who knows what else.
Yeah, and we'll see what other kind of swans come out of the woodwork by the time it's all said and done. Anyway, Check out Andy's work over at milesfranklin.com. Subscribe to his daily missive. Go to our site. Subscribe to our newsletter as well. And questions, comments, send an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. kl@kerrylutz.com. Andy, we will talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.